talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning. Today is May 23rd. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And this is the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. May 23rd. That means trivia night is coming up this Friday.
Yay.
Oh my goodness, it slipped my mind.
It is St. Louis. Cinema St. Louis's I Love Movies trivia is this Friday.
And we have built a tour de force team.
It is going to be a movie trivia bloodbath Friday night.
Yeah,
maybe. I don't know. There's a team that's...
We're not going to steamroller anybody.
That's right. There is another sort of Frankenstein...
Yes, we will.
There's a Frankenstein team on our tails.
We're not going to... Of course we will. We always
We probably will, but I don't know. I'm not taking it for granted. We do...
It's not going to be like a 30-point lead.
No. Well, last year, you know, we got 98, which was pretty spectacular, but Renee Hirschfeld's team got 96. She was right
and
on our tail.
I wasn't on the team last year, but
right.
I'm returning.
But Pete Timmerman is on our team after all. He originally said no, and now he said yes.
Oh,
and Ian McDonald from Allied is on our team.
He is.
Yeah, he knows a lot about films. I've talked to him about films. And he's young, too, so he may be able to fill in a few gaps on some of these more recent films.
For the rest of us.
Yeah, exactly. But we'll report on our big win next week on our show. But for now, we need to cover the top 12 at the box office. Michelle, I had to do this last week. Did you hear? I did it backwards. I did something a little different.
I really did. I was like, wow, that's kind of unique. Made me look bad.
No.
No, you
were missed.
You do this well. All right.
Thank you.
So what happened at the box office?
Here are the top 12 domestic weekend box office estimates as of Sunday, May 22nd from ComScore. In the number one spot is the Angry Birds movie with $39 million.
I had a feeling that would happen.
You did, Jim. I heard that. You said.
None of us saw that. It got reviewed at our website by Dane Marty. He gave it 4 out of 5 stars.
He liked it.
Yeah. He was more generous than a lot of reviewers, that's for sure.
I read that. Well,
I heard the humor is pretty crude in it. So, yeah.
Nothing wrong with
that.
If you're marketing it to kids, you know.
The trailers were kind of middle of the road.
Yeah, I probably won't say it.
The movie enjoyed a solid international debut a week ago, and this weekend, along with its North American debut, scored a very happy $94.5 million. So there it is.
Yeah. So we'll see how it holds up. Mm-hmm.
Disney's Captain America Civil War, Jim's favorite, is number two with $33.1 million.
Now, as I understand, that has crossed the $1 billion mark already.
It has joined the $1 billion club in global revenue.
It's just about $5 million over a billion. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's amazing. It's in less than 2 weeks. Now, another superhero film we know of, I saw that it is completely out of the top 25 already.
They did a reshuffling at Warner Brothers about who's heading up their superhero division. I just was reading that.
Yeah, Jeff Johns is still doing that. But the funniest thing I read last week is there's an internet petition to admonish Disney and tell them to quit bribing critics to give the Marvel Studio films great reviews. And I want to know, where's my money, Disney, for goodness sakes? And it's not, they say, not only extends to them, you know, critics bad-mouthing the DC superhero movies, but the Fox X-Men movies, because the advanced critical response to Apocalypse, which we'll talk about later, is not good. So I was like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, Civil War's done really well because of great reviews, and social media has still been crazy all over it.
It's an entertainment machine, that movie.
But it's a great, it's a fun movie. Oh. It's really well done.
Yes.
Coming in at number three is Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising. That film debuted this past weekend with $21.8
million. Yeah. Did you review that, James?
No. Michael did that for us.
He really liked it.
Did he like it?
He did.
I guess I didn't read his review. Yeah. I didn't like it. It was okay. It made me laugh. Yeah, we'll review it here in a minute.
Yeah.
It was kind of cheap laughs, though.
The film that Jim reviewed came in at number four, The Nice Guys, starring Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling. Mm-hmm. Directed by Shane Black, it brought in $11.3 million. An R-rated film.
That's not bad, really.
Yeah, for a non-sequel.
Mm-hmm. It beat Jungle Book.
Well, Jungle Book's been out, 6 weeks?
So it still beat Jungle Book.
Exactly.
So Jungle Book is what, number five, is it?
Jungle Book is number five from Disney, $11
million. Well, so has that crossed the $1 billion mark?
Just about.
On its way to the $1 trillion.
At number six was a film that Tom reviewed, Money Monster. That was directed by Jodie Foster, starring Julia Roberts
and George Clooney.
That film brought in its opening weekend $7.1 million. That received mixed reviews.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Deservedly so.
Mm-hmm. In the number seven spot was The Darkness. That brought in $2.4 million, a horror film, beginning of the summer type.
Yeah, you've not seen that yet, have you, Tom?
No, nobody's seen The Darkness at our site.
I thought maybe you snuck
out. We were going to go see it and, you know, get these bad reviews and...
Yes, it's still at zero at Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah,
I wonder.
I probably won't see it. I usually try to see every horror movie that opens, but
right.
I may end up skipping this one.
Another Disney film that has crossed the $1 billion mark is Zootopia.
Oh yes,
hanging in there, number eight spot with $1.7 million. And number nine is The Huntsman's Winter's War from Universal Pictures with $1.2 million.
It's surprising it's still in the top 10. Mm-hmm. Really.
And number 10 is Mother's Day from Open Road Pictures with $1.1 million, followed by Barbershop The Next Cut in the 11th spot with $0.8 million. And in the number 12 spot is The Meddler from Sony Pictures. Their film starring Susan Sarandon and Rose Byrne made $0.8 million.
Hey, I wonder how many screens. I don't know how many screens it's in here in town. Maybe about three screens in St. Louis or something?
Kate Marquis reviewed the... Lorene Scarafia film for us and really liked it and gave it a great review. Opening this coming Friday, the Memorial Day holiday on the 27th, is X-Men Apocalypse. Fox's latest installment of the popular franchise debuted with a terrific $103.3 million haul ahead of its North American opening later this week. Also opening is Alice Through the Looking Glass. And the new trailer hit this morning for Disney's other film, Beauty and the Beast.
Which will be what, next summer?
March 17, 2017.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
We'll get it.
Is that all it's opening this weekend? There's a couple of smaller films.
Wiener opens.
That's right. Yes.
I just like saying wiener. I'm going to say wiener a lot.
and the
podcast.
Lobster we're going to talk about.
Yes, the Lobster. Yes. And Love and Friendship opens.
Yes.
That's right.
Anybody see Love and Friendship besides me?
Did not. You got to see it.
I did see it. They showed it to me last Wednesday.
I think
morning.
Kate also saw it.
Yeah, she was there.
Good.
She's reviewing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wasn't able to make that.
But I like
what's
going to
be number
Austin's.
One, Alice or X-Men?
I think the X-Men will be number one. I predict that. And I think Alice could be number three or four. I think that the birds might hang in the top three, and I think Cap will still hang
Do you
top.
Think Angry Birds will have a huge, like, maybe 60%, 70%
drop?
Yeah.
All right, let's get started with these reviews. We've got a lot of movies to review. You guys saw X-Men, a couple weeks ago?
We did, a morning screen.
So let's hear about X-Men.
Whatever it is you think you saw in me, I buried it with my family.
Together, we will cleanse the Earth.
Everything they've built will fall! And from the ashes of their world, we'll build a better one!
I've never felt power like this before.
Well, you know, it's sort of following the same timeline, beginning with X-Men First Class. That was set in the 60s. Mm-hmm. The follow-up, X-Men Days of Future Past, was mostly set in 1972. This new one is set in 1983. And Professor Xavier is still running the School for Gifted Youngsters. There is a phony commercial, supposedly, from 1983 to get kids enrolled in the school. It's online. It's very well done. Clever. I
Very
enjoy
clever.
That. But the film actually starts off in ancient Egypt in one of the first mutants who we saw a little bit at the tail end of Days of Future Past. He's building pyramids in his honor, but it's a mutant that must sort of replenish himself and put himself in a new body, and there's some sort of treachery, and he gets sealed up in one of the pyramids. You know what happens when an evil entity gets sealed
which
up.
Which reminded me of Stargate. I was like, wait,
something's
going
to happen.
Oh, come on. I love Stargate.
That's going to get...
Stargate.
Tom prefers the TV shows. There's several Stargate TV spinoffs. But
I did like Wiener.
but we'll get to that, Tom. Does
this become a drinking game? Every time Tom says it.
So we zip ahead to to 83.
Yes.
They say we're still running that. Mystique is actually recruiting mutants. She gets finds out about a sort of underground like dog fighting, except it's mutant fighting, pitting mutants against each other. The champion is Angel. And the captured mutant that gets thrown into the ring, into the cage match with him, is Nightcrawler.
Does Michael Vick have a cameo?
No, he does not. The Nightcrawler is played by Cody Smith-McPhee, who I believe we last saw in Let Me In.
Yes.
Right? Very good, good young actor. She recruits him, gets him out of there. And, of course, actually, Rose Byrne, who was also in Neighbors 2, yeah. She has a major role in this one, coming back as Maura McTaggart, the FBI agent.
Glad to see her back.
She's underground and running around Egypt, and she finds out about the efforts by sort of a cult to bring this ancient mutant back to life, who is Apocalypse, played by Oscar Isaac, who we might remember as Llewyn Davis. Most recently as Poe Dameron, I believe, was from Star Wars, The Force Awakens, a good young actor. He, of course, wants to help make the mutants take over the world, or make sure that the mutants are okay, or worshipped as they should be. And he starts accumulating the four horsemen of the apocalypse, which are, we get to meet young Storm in this, and she's sort of a street rat running around stealing things, and he recruits her. He also recruits Cyclock, played by Olivia Munn, who's sort of a super assassin. He also gets the aforementioned Angel into his batch, and he also goes after Magneto, who is played by Michael Fassbender again. And since the incident on the White House lawn in 72, he has gone into hiding in Europe. I don't know if he's in Czechoslovakia or Poland or something like that, but of course he's working in a steel mill, got an assumed name and all that.
I like that backstory with his family.
They delve into what happened to his family at Auschwitz again. But his new family, he's got a wife and kid, and everything's nice. They got a little cabin in the woods and all that, and then of course something happens to the steel mill that he has to show his hand, and the authorities come running, tragedy ensues, and Magneto turns his back on humanity again and is soon recruited by Apocalypse. Xavier is running his school, and he finds out about what's going on via Cerebro, that plays a major role in this. See, Mystique is helping him. Do you see the recruitment of young Cyclops, young Scott Summers, who is played by Ty Sheridan, who we might remember from M.U.D., such a good young actor.
I love the casting of this film.
And Sophie Turner is already at the school as young Jean Grey, so the romance is starting with them. Well, thank heaven, the best part of Future Past is in this one. Quicksilver makes an appearance.
Yes.
He decides to look everybody up at the Xavier School. Nicholas Holt is back as Hank McCoy, the Beast. And, there's some really nice sequences in it, but at the end of it, they just go for this mass destruction, and you've got yet another sequence of Magneto floating and a lot of stuff, going through the air and some battles and all that, and it goes on a bit too long, really.
Yeah, how does it hold up to the other X-Men movies?
Of this threesome, I think it's the weakest.
Is this the fifth?
This is technically the sixth X-Men film. I'm dividing it into true trilogies.
Right.
But it's so funny, one of the best parts in it, they actually make a slam against one of the X-Men films, which was very funny in it, the one that Brett Ratner. Director, which no X-Men fan seemed to like.
Yeah. But I did like the score again from John Ottman, who usually is the editor and composer for a lot of Bryan Singer films, because he worked on Superman Returns, X-Men 2, Usual Suspects. So I did like a lot of his score again. He's worked on, few of the X-Men films.
Okay, so Jim, you're reviewing this for Weird Movie Geeks?
Michael Hafner.
Okay. If you were to review it, how many stars would you give it out of 5?
We'll give it 3, 3.5.
How about you, Michelle? How many stars would you give it?
Same.
Okay, 3, 3.5. So Jim and Michelle like this new X-Men movie, but not quite as much as some of the other X-Men movies.
Yeah, watch First Class if you haven't seen it. That's fine.
Isn't that?
There you go. All right, and that opens this Friday. Another movie that opens this Friday is Love and Friendship.
May I present Lady Susan?
Delighted to make your acquaintance.
He's handsome, isn't he? In a calf-like way.
Mannerings in town.
Have you seen my husband?
Horrid woman. Deranged. But if she were going to be jealous, she should not have married such a charming man. Does this woman always get her way?
She has an uncanny understanding of men's natures.
I think I'm the only one in the room that has seen Love and Friendship, so this will be a solo review from me. Love and Friendship is from writer-director Whit Stillman. Whit Stillman is not a very prolific director. This is only the fifth film he's made in the past 25 years. Whit Stillman is known for long, droll, witty dialogue about sexual politics and manners and wealth and romance, and it's based on a book by Jane Austen, who also wrote long dialogue about romance and class and manners. And so you would think this would be a perfect marriage between a director and a writer. Of course, Jane Austen wrote these things 200 years ago. And you'd be right. This is actually a terrific film. It's really, really funny. It's about this woman named Lady Susan, and she is played by Kate Beckinsale. And she is a beautiful widow who is sort of kicked out of her home, and she goes to Churchill Estate, where her brother-in-law lives with his family. And her brother-in-law's sister's brother is played by Xavier Samuel. So Kate, as Lady Susan, sort of has her eye on this Xavier Samuel guy because she needs to find a new husband or else she's going to run out of money. She brings her daughter with her. Actually, her daughter has dropped out of boarding school and has shown up at this estate as well. She is played by Morfydd Clark. So Lady Susan really needs to find not only a husband for herself, but a husband for her daughter. And her American friend, played by Chloe Sevigny, is with her. And they sort of have these... she's sort of her confidant, and Chloe is married to a much older man, played by Stephen Fry. And this is really a funny movie. The audience I saw it with was laughing quite a bit. It's only 90 minutes long. It just flies by. It's kind of reminiscent of those Jane Austen movies that came out, 15 or 20 years ago, that were so popular.
Like the one Emma Thompson did.
Yeah, that was called Emma. And Sensibilities and Pride and Prejudice. I think this is considered to be a lesser Jane Austen novel.
It's a young Jane Austen novella.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought it was written after her death.
It was published after her death.
Yeah, it was revised and finally published by her nephew.
Yeah, and Kate Beckinsale is actually really fantastic in the movie. She's really funny, and she's very conniving, and you don't really know what she's up to. She always has, plan B several steps ahead of her because she's going to end up marrying the most wealthy of these eligible bachelors that show up. There's also a character named, I don't remember the character's name, but he's played by Tom Bennett. He's this buffoonish wealthy man who doesn't know what peas are.
Sir James Martin.
Yes, exactly. Sir James. And he's really funny. Kate Beckinsale, like I say, she's fantastic. But I think this was closer to the end of the year. You'd be talking awards buzz for Miss Beckinsale. I've always
really?
Liked her.
Well, you never know.
Maybe not. I mean, this movie could be a something of a breakout hit. I mean, Kate's...
It's rated PG.
Yeah, it's rated PG.
90
not,
minutes.
Not a cuss word or a...
No one's popping out of the corsets.
Well, there's... Chloe Sevigny sort of popping out of her corset, but that's okay.
Fans of this, Anglephiles will turn out for this in droves.
Like I say, and then Kate Beckinsale, she's kind of wasted her career a little bit. Wasn't she in an Adam Sandler movie? And she those goofy underworld movies.
Goofy?
When I see vampires and werewolves fighting, I want to see them blasting each other with
not even the first one. Oh, come on.
Well, they're not bad, but I think they're just a little beneath her.
They're repetitive.
Michael
Sheen? No.
Nope.
Love and Friendship, it's an excellent movie. If I were to review it, I would give it probably a solid 4.5 stars. And it's not even my cup of tea.
It's totally not your cup.
But still, I call him as I see him. And Kate Marquis will be reviewing it for WeAreMovieGeeks.com. And I know she liked it as well. So look for Kate's review Thursday night over at We Are Movie Geeks. Another movie that opens Friday, and Jim saw it. It's called Lobster.
Have you ever been on your own before?
No, never.
Your last relationship lasted how many years?
12.
Sexual preference?
Women.
Any children?
No.
And the dog?
This is my brother. He was here a couple of years ago, but he didn't make it.
The Lobster.
What the heck is this Lobster movie about?
Well, this actually is a somewhat futuristic, whimsical fantasy. It stars Colin Farrell, and he's a fellow that his wife has lost or has run away from him. And in this future society, if you're not involved in a relationship, you are sort of taken in and taken to this grand estate, and you're given about 45 days to establish a relationship with someone. Otherwise, you will be turned into an animal. And his choice is a lobster because he always liked the sea, and lobsters have blue blood, and he kind of likes that. And when he tells this to the people running the institute, they said, well, that's good because most people want to be be dogs, and we got plenty of dogs.
So there's a lot of CGI transformation effects in this movie?
No. You never actually see the process. What? You see the end result. And he makes a couple of buddies at this institute. It's like an estate. It's like a plush hotel. And a couple of his buddies are played by John C. Reilly and Ben Whishaw. Or is that how I pronounce this? Whiteslaw, Whishaw?
Q.
Yes, Q. Yeah, who's been pretty busy in movies lately.
Yes.
And one of the recreational things that they give the people staying at the spa to do every day, they issue them tranquilizer rifles, and they send them out on buses into the woods to track down the loners, which I guess are people that have rejected this idea of being turned into animals and you know, having to being forced to be in a relationship and roam the forest by themselves. And the people with the tranquilizers go sort of bag them and take them back to the institute to be turned into animals. Along the way, Colin Farrell's character tries to get in a relationship. It doesn't quite work out. He knows that he's going to be on the operating table there. I guess they have to take out your eyes and your brain and put it in animals. And before that happens, he escapes into the forest and joins up with a group of loners led by Léa Seydoux, who we last saw in Spectre.
Mm-hmm.
And he falls in love with one of the loners, who's actually played by James Bond's wife, Rachel Weisz. It sort of switches gear, and it's all about them trying to live within this this rebel group and sneaking into the city for little visits and all that, and trying to keep under the radar. It's okay. I like the first half of the movie better, the first of the two movies that it comprise this film, that stuff set at the spa, at the hotel. It's kind of interesting and kind of fun. But the stuff in the forest and some of the loners do not accept anyone in their group getting in a relationship and are falling in love, and it gets a little ponderous. But you like the kind of unusual films. This kind of reminds me of the Charlie Kaufman films, like Being John Malkovich,
that's what it looks
or Adaptation.
Like in the trailer, yeah.
If you like that sort of dry, sensibility, you might enjoy this. But right. If I were reviewing it, I would probably give it 3.5.
Oh, yeah. Who's reviewing that?
Well, Michael.
That's right. That's right. We're going to reprint Michael Hafner's review because he saw it at Fantastic Fest last fall. So look for Michael Hafner's review of Lobster Thursday night at We Are Movie Geek. Now it's time to review Wiener.
I am profoundly sorry, and for that I am profoundly sorry.
Does the wife's absence say anything?
What is wrong with you?
What is he so afraid of?
Your brother said that your father never hugged you.
Do you believe you're suffering from any sort of addiction?
What are you, the referee over there?
We are staying calm and managing the situation.
You're a real scumbag, Anthony.
Takes one to know one, jackass.
Why didn't you just walk back?
I will be reviewing Wiener for WeirdMovieGeeks.com. Wiener is a documentary. It is about Anthony Wiener. Anthony Wiener was a congressman in the U.S. House of Representatives from New York. And he was kind of a firebrand. They show some footage of him at the beginning, yelling and screaming and stomping and throwing his books on the podium. And he's kind of like Ted Kennedy after a 5-martini lunch, just kind of an obnoxious guy. But a very effective liberal voice. And turns out that he had a little habit. He was sending pictures of his genitals to college-age girls. He didn't even know these girls. So first he denied it and said, oh, somebody must have hacked into my account. I remember when this happened. This was around May of 2011. Aww. But then it turns out nobody hacked into his account. He had done it, so he had to resign in disgrace. Cut to 2 years later, and Anthony Wiener is living in New York, and he has decided to run in the Democrat primary for New York mayor. And he hires these two filmmakers, and one of these filmmakers I think had worked for him earlier. Here's two follow him around. He thinks he's going to be the comeback kid. So this documentary, Wiener, is the result of these two filmmakers following him around in his quest for mayor of New York. Things go pretty well at first. He manages to find quite a large crew of young, enthusiastic supporters to volunteer for him. And he's even polling number one there for a while. But guess what? He hadn't given up his unfortunate habit of texting and sexting young girls. And the first time he did it, by the way, his wife was pregnant. Now he's got like a 2-year-old, and he's still doing this. But this time he has changed his handle on his texting to, was it Carlos Danger?
Carlos Danger, yes, indeed.
And his favorite woman to text is this woman named Sydney Leathers, and that's her real name.
Sydney, she's in Vegas or something, yeah.
Yeah, and she is introduced on the Howard Stern Show, and she is like, has big boobs and just comes off as a total idiot. And Howard Stern talks her into crashing Anthony Weiner's Election Day party. Meanwhile, Anthony Weiner has been married to, what was her name, Huma Abedin?
Oh, yeah.
And she is Hillary, or was, not anymore, but she was Hillary Clinton's right-hand woman. And Huma sort of stands by her husband's side, at least in appearance for this film. She seems to, up until the end. This is a really funny documentary, and it's a really a perfect mix of this documentary, and then a lot of clips from comedy shows and late night news shows. There's a hilarious scene where Jane Lynch and who was the comedian that she was
with? Bill Maher.
Oh, is that who that was?
That was Bill Maher on his HBO show.
Who actually sort of breathily recreate or act out the sex that Carlos Danger and Sydney Leathers have texted to each other. That is really funny. It's kind of remarkable because you're just astounded at this guy's sort of lack of self-awareness. Why would he let this camera crew follow him around during the most humiliating segments? There's actually a scene where he's rehearsing his apology, and he's like, "I'm so sorry, I did this." And then he tries it in different tones, and he doesn't like look at the camera and say, "What? Doesn't this sound a little more sincere?"
I think I know why he allows the crew in there. I'll get into that when you get
but I mean,
there.
That's like what villains do in movies. It's really weird that this guy is just so clueless. I think maybe he thought he was going to be, you know, Bill Clinton, and you know, Bill Clinton survived a sex scandal. But Bill Clinton had, you know, charm and charisma. This guy is very. This Wiener guy is really abrasive.
But the thing is, Bill actually had physical contact with these people. Yeah, that was one of the things they bring out of the film. Anthony Weiner never met these people in real life, never had any physical contact with any of them.
Yeah, so he threw his career away just to have some dirty phone talk with some women. It's really a good documentary, though. It's really funny. And this Wiener guy is just so thin-skinned. There's one scene where somebody says, "Oh, you're a perv," or what does he say? He goes, "Hey, same back at you, jackass."
Oh, the scene in the bakery. In the bakery, yeah. But, well, the guy went after his wife, though, too, in the bakery. So, he had to stand up for her. But, where you see a comedy, I see a tragedy because I focused on Huma. And she just looks miserable. I think she was uncomfortable enough sort of being used in the campaign at the start of it. As you say, he was doing very well at the start of the campaign. He was kind of pushing himself as the family guy again and having her speak with him at different venues, and she was very uncomfortable doing that anyway. And when all this stuff goes on, the camera goes over to her, and she just looks so sad and so miserable. That was the tragedy of the movie to me, that and the fact that this guy was passionate and would do a good job for his constituents. He would try to get stuff passed, but he's undone. What is the old expression? The fault is not in our stars, but in ourselves.
Yep.
And his own hubris and, you know, his ego takes him down. Mm-hmm. And that is part of the tragedy also, that I think he sincerely thought he was going to be able to recover from this second scandal with Sydney Leathers. And that's another part of the tragedy, the second half of it, that he has deluded himself into thinking that he can get past that. What also was interesting was the scenes after the second scandal when he would try to talk to the press, and there's actually one scene, he says, "Anybody want to talk about the issues?" Oh, and nobody asks anything. I said, "What about this? You can ask me anything." And then all of a sudden, they shoot up. And it's basically a way for a lot of the press to assert their moral superiority over him and try to take him sort of to the woodshed and, you know, punish him. This reminds me a little bit of some of the hack reviewers out there that have to start every review of a new Woody Allen film with delving into his scandals. Like, come on, you know?
Well, speaking of Woody Allen, I said this. It reminded me a little bit of Crimes and Misdemeanors, where Alan Alda hires Woody Allen to follow him around and make a documentary about him, and he just comes off looking like a total ass. And yeah. But he's so unaware. He's just...
Well, at one point in this one, he says, "Oh, this is supposed to be fly on the wall. Flies don't really talk and, you know, ask questions, do they?"
Yeah.
So he's
yeah.
getting the gist of it by the end of it. And he, at the start of the film, you see him being interviewed after the documentary footage is all done, and he says to himself, "Well, why did I do this?"
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's an interesting film. That's for certain. It's an interesting look at it. And well, that and he has to put his wife on the phone with him to get donors, to get people to contribute to his campaign, and that's another interesting part of it, to see actually these politicians having to beg for money, which is, you know, so frustrating about the political process these days.
Yeah, and then the movie doesn't touch on this, but this Sidney Leathers gal has parlayed her 15 minutes of fame into a career in hardcore pornography.
Well, they show that she's part of a website that has the Kim, well, that's first had the Kim Kardashian sex tape and other sex tapes.
Yeah.
And she's, well, when she's trying to meet Anthony
that's
for the first time,
scene.
They said, "Pineapple is in the building." they called her Pineapple.
Yeah, and his handlers are like rushing him away from her.
Has to go through a McDonald's to escape her. And she's in a, squeezed into a dress that's like three sizes too small.
Yeah, I'm sure her parents are very proud. So look for my review of Wiener, Thursday night at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. A couple of movies that opened over the weekend that we got to see last week. Neighbors 2.
They're trying to dismantle our sorority.
I got an idea. We go with the airbag trick.
That's not going to work.
If it worked with guys, why won't it work for girls?
Because guys are idiots.
Michael reviewed that,
right.
he took the gist of a lot of reviewers talking about it being a female empowerment film, but it's just not that funny.
Well,
it's nowhere near the first one.
There's a lot of laughs in it, but they're cheap laughs. I mean,
they are.
Opens with Rose Byrne puking on Seth Rogen's face, which, you know, and then everybody in the audience goes, "Oh, she puked on his face," but big deal.
But you know, Rose had much more to do in the first film. I think she might have actually been pregnant in real life during the making of this one, so maybe that's why they took her a lot of the action. I've enjoyed Chloe Moritz Grace in her other film roles, but I don't think she's got quite the comedy chops yet. I think actually Zac Efron was a funnier enemy to go against in the first film, and I guess they're praising it because, you know, the sororities can't have parties, it turns out, and they're trying to, you know, be on an equal footing with the fraternity guys who when they go to the parties, they said, "Well, it's kind of rapey in here," and so they get out of there, and they actually try to get the fraternity guys to go to their party by posting a video with them as this little, you know, vixens and all that, and they kind of get disgusted with that, and that's kind of a nice message, but let's get the laughs going,
guys. It's such a retread of the original, too. It's basically the same exact story, except the sorority instead
but how's
of
Zac
fraternity.
Efron?
He's very funny.
He's actually pretty good. But they bring in, you know, the whole, they had like these car airbags in the first one, people flying through the air. There's a scene where Seth Rogen and his buddy are trapped in a garage and they're trying to get out, so they use these airbags from the car, which I guess airbags like really easy to remove and just sit on. But it goes on and on and on. And then there's all this kind of gross stuff. The girls throw bloody feminine products at their house. And there's this whole running gag where their 2-year-old or 1-year-old has this dildo or vibrator.
They show that in the trailer.
And it goes,
I was like, what?
It's sort of funny the first time the kid's playing with it, but the kid's playing with it throughout the entire movie.
You kind of see where it's going towards the end of it. It's just kind of ridiculous with the resolution to all the problems with the sorority and all that. And it seemed like, you say Chloe was okay in it, but like I say, they weren't as strong as the frat guys were next to them, although their pranks could be just as vicious.
Yeah.
And it seemed like one of the gals was sort of channeling an early version of Seth Rogen in it, was sort of the party animal of it. So, it has its good intentions, but the pacing is off,
So, Jim and I don't really recommend Neighbors 2, although there are probably worse comedies out there. In fact, this is off subject, but I rented Dirty Grandpa.
Zac
Efron. And that is one of the most miserably awful movies I've ever had.
The one with De Niro.
De Niro's made a lot of bad films.
This is the worst movie De Niro has ever been in. And that's saying
something.
Right
now, he's just, it's a paycheck.
I just felt so bad for some of the dialogue he had to recite in this.
Just glad he's part of David O. Russell's crew.
Look, exactly.
So he can be in a good movie every once in a while.
That's right.
Once a year, he's got it,
That's right. All right, let's move on to another comedy that we saw, and that is called Nice Guys.
Look at the bright side. Nobody got hurt. People got hurt. I'm saying I think they died quickly, though, so I don't think that they got hurt.
Come on! Nice Guys opened this past Friday. It stars Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling, and it's directed and written by Shane Black.
Of Lethal Weapon.
That's right.
Yes.
And I lent Jim Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. This is really more along the lines of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. It's got some very, a lot of clever dialogue. It's a little overplotted, I think, but it's got like this all this hipster, ironic, funny dialogue, and most of it worked. I do think it's sort of lost its way about halfway through. I think the plot got a little too convoluted.
Probably when Kim Basinger came in, was on the kind of went off the rails, or maybe a little before that.
I mean, at least Kim Basinger, she was the impetus for what was going on.
Yeah.
Because you're like, where is this thing going?
And
there was this whole conspiracy about the big three automakers in Detroit, and that was sort of interesting, but it took an awful long time to sort of figure out what that was.
But how's the chemistry between Gosling and Crowe?
But the trouble is that Gosling's character is such an idiot. Then you're like, you just couldn't survive in that world if you were that stupid.
And
the fact that he's got a 13-year-old daughter, you're like, oh my gosh, she's more mature than him.
Well, he brings his 13-year-old daughter to like this porno party. Well, I guess in fairness, she snuck in the trunk of his car. And then his daughter is like in all these gunfights. And he doesn't seem that concerned. I mean, there's a scene where Keith David sticks a gun in his daughter's back and says, I got a gun in your daughter's back. And he just kind of laughs and makes some crude jokes and doesn't seem too concerned that his daughter is about to get shot.
It was nice to see Keith David in it,
though. Oh, yeah, he's good.
He was good there. And Matt Bomer has a little change of pace as the grinning killer named John Boy.
John Boy, because he has a mole on his cheek like John Boy Walton, yeah.
But it seems whenever the gunplay starts, Shane Black has to show somebody in the background taking a hit, taking a bullet during these things. It's like, you know, it's not enough that they're destroying all these houses and, you know, cars and all that, but he's got to show the collateral damage.
So what did you think of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, I liked it a lot more. Yeah. Well, mostly because of Robert Downey Jr., and I actually enjoyed Val Kilmer's character in it quite
Gay
a bit.
Paris.
Yeah, and Michelle
Monaghan.
That's
a fun movie to watch. Anytime it shows up, I watch
it. And the plot is pretty convoluted with that also, but it seems to work a little bit better with Downey doing his rapid-fire wisecracks in it.
Yeah. So Nice Guys is actually a pretty good movie. Jim and I think we'll agree that we just wish it had been better. This week, we're seeing some movies. Tomorrow night, we're seeing Alice Through the Looking Glass.
I seek a young lady. Her hair?
Yes.
Yellowish. Her name, Alice.
Is produced by Tim Burton. Who directed that, do we know?
This one is directed by James Bobbin, who also had directed the Muppets movies, Most Wanted and that Muppets film with Jason Segel.
And Johnny Depp and Anne Hathaway and a bunch of people are back for that one. So we'll have a review of that one. Who's reviewing that?
I think Melissa. Right.
Melissa Howland. Okay.
Melissa Howland.
Look for Melissa's review Thursday night. Also, Sunset Song. What is that?
That is an Irish romance set about 200-300 years ago or something like that. The young lovers facing the tough land.
Earlier reviews say it's charming.
Okay.
Yeah, so I might go see that.
All right, and I think Kate Marquis is reviewing that. Mm-hmm. And also we're seeing a documentary called Dark Horse, which I just found out 1 minute ago is a documentary, and I guess it's about a horse. I don't know. But I'm reviewing that for next week. Mm-hmm. So those are some movies that will be reviewing next week and talking about next week's podcast. Didn't the Cannes Film Festival end last night?
It did.
They had a lot of interesting movies, but none of the movies that looked interesting to me won anything. What the heck won it over at Cannes, Michelle?
The jury of the 69th Festival de Cannes, presided by George Miller, has, according to their press release last night, had revealed the names of the 2016 prize winners during the award ceremony. The prize givers and winners came on the stage at the Grand Theater Lumiere to the sound of music playing. The American actor, I love the press release, the American actor Mel Gibson had the honor of awarding the Palme d'Or to the best of the 21 films in competition. Daniel Blake by Ken Loach won Palme d'Or. So it won. It won the big one.
That's an English language film, right?
Has he won before? Ken Loach has been around forever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he has.
Has he?
The Grand Prix Award went to Xavier Dolan for his film "It's Only the End of the World."
Guy's kind of pessimistic with his films.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Award for they also awarded Best Director. That was a tie. Olivier Assayas for "Personal Shopper" and Christian Mungiu for "Baccalaureate."
I understand "Personal Shopper" was the recipient of many boos there. That was one of the first films to
variety.
Get booed.
I love when Variety is like, yeah, these are the great movies, but the ones that were just, you know.
Well, Michael was telling me in one scene she texts a ghost. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like that, you know, when the movie comes to a halt, I guess.
Kristen Stewart's movie was also like booed, heavily booed.
Oh, that's the Personal Shopper
movie. Is it?
Movie.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Well,
she's
also in the Woody Allen movie, Cafe Society.
Yeah, that's what I was, right.
Which is supposed to be really good.
Yeah,
did you read anything about
that?
I don't know a whole lot about it. I think it took place in
the
1930s.
The trailer and the poster. I put that up last week.
Steve Carell and Blake Lively.
Yeah, it actually looks very
Jesse
entertaining.
Jesse Eisenberg, without an orange wig in this one.
What other awards?
Award for Best Screenplay went to Asghar Farhadi for The Salesman, but he's won the Oscar for another foreign language film previously.
Okay.
The jury prize went to American Honey by Andrea Arnold. Award for Best Actress went to Jacqueline Jose Moroso for Mendoza.
Mm-hmm.
And Best Actor went to Shahab Husseini for The Salesman by Asghar Farhadi again.
Oh, I love Shahab Husseini. Well, congratulations to all the winners over at the Cannes Film Festival. There were some interesting films there. Did you hear about the Sean Penn movie that got booed?
Yes.
The Last Face.
That was all over Twitter.
Is that the one with Dakota Fanning?
No, you're thinking of Nicholas Winding Refn's film.
Okay,
and it's not Dakota Fanning, it's her sister Elle Fanning.
Elle Fanning, mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's about cannibalistic supermodels.
Oh, no, Charlize Theron is the one that Sean
Yeah, Charlize record. Theron and Javier Bardem, and they're about refugee workers in Africa who, I guess, fall in love or something. It supposedly just got booed from beginning to end. And Woody Allen's movie Cafe Society played, and that's getting pretty good reviews. Paul Verhoeven's first movie in 10 years.
Really?
It's called Elle, and it's actually a French-language film starring Isabelle Huppert, and it's about a woman who's raped, and she starts stalking her rapist, and it's supposed to be quite controversial. I'm really looking forward to that. I love Verhoeven.
Oh, yeah. And, 10 years, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think The Black Book was his last film. Jim Jarmusch had a new film called Paterson,
mm-hmm.
with Adam Driver as a bus-driving poet.
Yeah, you EW was saying that Driver got a lot of praise there at that.
I like him.
Yeah.
I'm really, really.
So this might be his breakthrough film.
Yeah,
because no one saw him in that little science fiction thing he did last year.
Hey,
I saw it. All right, so well, congratulations to the Cannies.
All them winners.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about some local stuff going on in town. This Friday and Saturday at the Midnight Show over at the Tivoli is Pulp Fiction.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I wonder if they've run that in Midnight before.
They have.
That seems like a perfect Midnight.
Yeah. It won't be out till 3 in the morning, but that's okay. those younger movie goers would be fun.
It's just one of those films, if I'm flipping the dial and it's on uncensored, I'll just sit and watch it for a little bit.
And also at the Tivoli this Thursday night, they're showing The Last Dragon.
And I'm looking for the little pup. Thinks he's a kung fu master.
I am no master.
You sure look like a master to me.
This is Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon.
The Last Dragon was a huge hit in 1985. I remember it played at the Varsity, which is down the street from the Tivoli. It's now Vintage Vinyl. And The Last Dragon played there for weeks and weeks and weeks. I saw it there, and it was kind of a fun movie. It's kind of a disco, kung fu, hip-hop, MTV-inspired comedy action musical. Vanity is in it, and this actor whose name is Timac is in it, and Timac will be at the screening of The Last Dragon on Thursday night. Timac was 19 years old when he starred in The Last Dragon in 1985. He's an African-American martial arts whiz. He kind of looks a bit like Jim Kelly. He's very charismatic.
From Enter the Dragon.
Yeah. And The Last Dragon, he plays Leroy Green, but they call him Bruce Leroy throughout the film. And he's written a book, autobiography, about the making of The Last Dragon. So he's going to be at the Tivoli Thursday night. He'll do a Q&A, and I might be hosting this. I'm not sure.
One night only, though.
Yeah, that's right. And if you buy a ticket for $50... you get the book, hardback of the edition of the book, and autograph of Mr. Timac and
take a picture with him, I guess.
Yeah, right? Stuff like that. Or you can pay $10 and just show up and watch the movie, and I'm not sure if you get an autograph or not. All right, what else is going on locally, guys? How about, did I mention the Mad Max play? Isn't that weird?
That is weird, yeah. Yeah. You posted about that.
Yeah, that's right. It's not going to be as action-packed as the film. These are the magic
stage.
The magic smoking monkey. This is a offshoot of St. Louis Shakespeare, and every year they take a cult movie or a series of cult movies and they make it into a stage play. I saw them do all 7 Harry Potter movies in an hour a couple years ago, and that was really funny.
Yeah, I saw them do Plan 9 from Outer Space. You can't lose with that.
That doesn't need to be spoofed. Although the one that you and I saw a couple years ago, it was Twilight Zone
and an episode of Super Friends.
Yeah, that was, I think, one of their weaker ones.
An episode of Super Friends?
Really? The interchangeable capes.
Yeah. It sounds funnier than it was.
Yeah.
But usually, that was a rare miss for them. Usually these plays are really funny. And then when we were doing Vincentennial 5 years ago, they did The Abominable Dr. Fibes. So these guys are very funny and very talented, and I'm sure their Mad Max play, which runs June 10th, 11th, 17th, and 18th at 8 o'clock and 10:30 over at Regional Arts Commission building on the Loop.
So it's all four films, you said, crammed into one stage show.
Exactly.
Okay, that could be fun.
So that's, let's see. Federico Fellini's City of Women is at Webster University this Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday.
Is that part of that cinematographer series?
I don't think so, because it didn't win. They're doing a Oscar-winning cinematographer series. I think the weekend after that they're showing The Picture of Dorian Gray, which did win Best Cinematography. Oh. I'm not sure why they're showing Fellini's City of Women. I don't know why they're showing it 5 nights. But they are, and I've never seen Fellini's City of Women. I've seen most of Fellini's films. I've seen most of them on the big screen. This is one of the later films he did. It was made in 1981, and it stars Marcello Mastroianni as a guy who gets off a train and has entered a world that is run by women. Crazy! What kind of crazy science fiction is that?
Yeah, that's baby. God.
So I'll probably go see that.
Talk about your dystopian future.
Oh, my God.
Hey!
I'm here. I'm listening.
Yeah. So that is over at Webster University, and that'll be a lot of fun. What else? Oh, Webster University also does, what do they call it, the Strange Brew film series?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're showing a giallo from 1971. I don't know who picks these things, but I'm glad they picked this one. It's called Death Walks on High Heels. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of Italian giallo films from the 70s, but I've never seen this one. It just came out in a box set. It was a little...
They have some really good film series.
I'd never heard of this one.
It was directed by Luciano Ercoli. It was made in 1971, and it stars Susan Scott, and I'm sure it's about a masked killer stabbing people, and that's what all those movies are about.
I'm sure it's an Italian actress with an Americanized name, Susan Scott, more than likely.
And so, I don't know. I'm going to go see it. It looks pretty good. That is Wednesday, is that the 1st or the 2nd?
Wednesday is the 1st.
Okay, Wednesday the 1st.
Oh, okay.
Schlafly Bottle Works at 8 o'clock. Okay. And that is, I think, $5. We can announce right here for the first time the Tivoli's new midnight schedule.
Oh,
no one's
funny.
Heard this. It hasn't been anywhere.
Oh, tell us.
Oh, yes, I will. June 3rd and 4th, Purple Rain. Did they just show that at a bunch of theaters a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, they did.
All right, well.
Good luck.
The Tivoli's a little behind on that one, but, you know, it'll do well.
Yeah, they weren't showing it at midnight at those other theaters.
Right.
Yeah.
And then June 10th and 11th is The Breakfast Club. I'm not a fan of The Breakfast Club. I never have been. Are you?
Yes,
are you, Michelle? What do you like about The Breakfast Club?
I love that it was set in the 80s.
It was made in the 80s.
Well, I know. But, I mean, it was a high school. It's a nostalgia thing. You know, I graduated in 84 from high school, so it's a whole... I love the music.
Yeah, one of the Breakfast Club is in the X-Men movie.
Yes.
I was really surprised.
Yes,
that.
Wasn't that great?
Yeah.
Loved Ally Sheedy.
Ally Sheedy.
Well, yeah, spoiled it there.
Yeah.
I was making memes there. People might have thought it was Judd Nelson.
How does she look? Last time I saw her,
she looks
rough.
Great.
Really?
Yes. She looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. She's
just.
Most attractive teacher in it.
Okay, CGI will work wonders. June 17th and 18th, Fantastic Planet. I think we've talked about this movie.
Oh.
That is a French anime from 1972,
ooh, good
I think. 73. 71? I don't know. It's
giant
an old
blue
movie.
Creatures and all this. Yeah, yeah.
They've never shown that before. It seems like something of a surprising choice. I saw it at the old Kirkwood Cinema.
Gives the lineup a gravitas type of...
I guess, but there's actually 3 animes on this schedule.
Yeah.
I'll get to those in a minute. Troll 2 is June 24th and 25th. Have anybody seen that?
I've seen, of course,
the first one.
This one has a reputation. Didn't they do a documentary
about
this?
I remember renting it when it was new and thinking, this is kind of a crappy movie. But now they're like, showing it at midnight is like the world's worst movie. If you're trying to make a bad movie, you can't make a cult movie. And that's kind of the impression I got from Troll 2. Although it was made by an Italian director who's probably was sort of clueless. But
be tough to beat Birdemic, though, yeah. As far as worst movies go.
Yeah. And then July 1st and 2nd is a movie, I haven't heard of this one, Jaws.
Oh, yeah, but something about a fish.
Is Richard Dreyfuss in that? Is that the one with Richard Dreyfuss?
Good. Yeah. I've seen, they've had Jaws there before.
They often do that on 4th of July weekend.
Well, because that's when it's set.
That's when it's set.
I watch that every year. My favorite
Dreyfuss
movie.
Dreyfuss was in Piranha 3D. That's what you're thinking.
That's your favorite movie of all time.
That is my favorite movie of all time.
But what's your favorite Steven Spielberg movie of all time?
Whoa. Jaws.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Well, so Michelle will be at Jaws. We should have Michelle introduce Jaws.
I love that film. I read the book every year, the timeline. Somebody made up, it's on Google, the timeline of from the first attack to the...
Oh, yeah.
It's fun.
All right. Well, good. Jaws. And July 8th and 9th is Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind.
What?
Oh, yes. Another anime.
That's Miyazaki. Yeah.
Thank you.
Miyazaki on the schedule, and the Miyazakis pack them in. I've never heard of this one. Have you heard of this one?
Dave? I have heard of it vaguely. I've never seen it.
Okay. All right. I never stick around. I introduced, of course, the Midnight Movies at the Tivoli, but I have never stuck around.
And you do a fine job, I must say.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. July 15th to 16th. Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window. That's my favorite Hitchcock.
Oh, really? Mm. And, your favorite Hitchcock.
That is my favorite Hitchcock.
That's a darn good one.
It is. It's amazing.
Yeah. Did you originally see it when they reissued it to theaters
in
the late
80s? I did, 1982, maybe. Yeah, have we
seen the lineup yet for the Forest Park?
Yeah. It's,
Rocky.
Let me finish this.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay, because I only have one more to go. July 22nd and 23rd. Oh, the 23rd is my daughter's birthday. Akira. So that's a famous Japanese.
Yes, that's good.
It was made around 1990.
Osamu, or I think is the director's name, something like that. But it's a good one.
So three animes. Yes. The Forest Park Art Hill film series in July, every Friday in July.
Which we always hit one.
We try to, yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah. Top Gun, Rocky, E.T., and Forrest Gump. I'll actually put up an article about that this week.
I'd love to see Rocky.
Rocky was going to be great.
Rocky's so racist.
It is.
One more thing of note before we go. The trailer,
we can do Disney. Two things of note if you'd like.
Disney released today Beauty and the Beast, their live action based on the 1991 film starring Emma Watson, Ian McKellen, Emma Thompson. It looks great. We did not see the Beast in the trailer, thank goodness. And I hope they keep that until next March. The film opens next
Who's
March.
Playing the Beast?
Well, Dan Stevens, right?
Is Dan the Beast? Stevens from
The Guest.
And Downton Abbey.
The Guest or The Visitor? Was that the name?
The Guest.
That was The Guest.
Well, what's his name?
Dan Stevens.
That's his name.
British actor.
He was in the Smithsonian. He was the guy who was melting in the Smithsonian.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Is that his name?
Lancelot in that or something?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Downton Abbey, they had, he had his character killed off so he could be in movies.
All right, well, good. And how's the trailer look?
Oh, very Disney.
All right.
It's more of a teaser, I guess. But it looks great.
And Friday night at Paramount Pictures was the big fan event for the next Star Trek movie. This year marks the 50th anniversary, August of 1966, when Star Trek, Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek debuted.
So they had a big...
They also made part of the soundstage Leonard Nimoy Way. So they invited his widow and his family. Not that I saw, but the stars of the film were. And we got a first look at the brand new Star Trek Beyond trailer, which is up online. Mm-hmm. And they're going to show the movie to fans and everyone gathered at this Comic-Con.
Nifty.
Up. But the trailer looks good. I'm a little wary of it being released end of July. It's not their tentpole type movie, which you think it would be. But I think they were releasing it more towards when it first debuted in August of '66. So
yeah, I'm interested in someone other than Abrams directing this one.
I think I'd be interested too.
To see somebody else.
Who's directing?
James Wan. Right?
James. Oh, okay. Yeah. Really? And the villain is Idris Elba.
Isn't he do The Conjuring too? Also,
I believe so. Yeah. So he's got a busy plate there. Okay. Busy schedule.
One is Justin Lin and one is James Wan. I think Justin Lin is doing Star Trek.
Oh, Justin Lin. Okay.
He did some of the Fast and Furious films.
Yes. Oh, okay. That's getting confused there.
Speaking of Fast and Furious, we got a first look photo of Charlize Theron. She's in the Fast and Furious
8. Does she have one arm?
No, she doesn't.
So how Fast and Furious can it really be if she's not Furiosa?
That's right. She's called Fast and Furiosa.
They just started filming that in Cuba as well. So Vin Diesel has put
up a few. Are you serious?
Yeah. In Cuba, now that the sanctions are left, baby.
Oh, Lord.
They're going over in droves.
That Ernest Hemingway flick was the first of many.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll review these movies when they come out. Mm-hmm. And next week we'll be back and we'll get to review Alice Through the Looking Glass.
So the summer film season has officially started.
And Dark Horse and Sunset Song and probably a couple of other films.
Yeah.
We'll actually be on next Tuesday instead of Monday because Monday is Memorial Day. But for now, we're going to have to retire this week's show. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
And Disney, send me my money to send my bribe to Jim Bats.
Yes, we do take bribes. Listen again next week.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather.
Oh, naughty state. Hello, darling.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather, hip, hip.